people talking right about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the red line, find fighting men, talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country. Just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the real life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of death. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on AltRightTV.com or LightResistanceRadio.com. You can reach us through either pathway. Oh, Saturday was a great day in Toronto for free speech, for those of us who are trying to reassert our freedoms and protect what's left of them in the from the turmoil and freedom grabs that are going on, all in the name of stopping or fighting or flattening the curve or whatever they want to call it in regards to the coronavirus, the Wuhan flu. I gave several over the protests in Toronto. We were blessed with an extremely warm May, sunny May afternoon, beautiful weather. And we've not had a lot of that in eastern Canada this spring. It was like last year. This spring pretty much was no spring at all. Cold, windy, rainy weather really up until just a couple of days ago. And we've gone from mild winter, unpleasant winter, almost to summer with not much of a transition in between. Anyway, a beautiful day. I would estimate there were about 800 people that gathered at Queen's Park. Now, at Queen's Park is where the Legislative Assembly for the Province of Ontario is. It's right in the center of the city with a large, as you might expect, park. And gathering around the statue of the first Prime Minister of our country, Sir John A. Macdonald, were a group of freedom fighters. Again, many different issues. Of course, ours, most of all, is freedom of speech, and we see attempts to curtail freedom of speech in this in the efforts to fight the coronavirus. But that's not the only other freedoms, freedom of movement. It's not always easy, possible to move from one province to another anymore. To travel from southern Quebec across the New Brunswick line to visit a relative or whatever may get you stopped and sent back. Not essential travel. Same with access to Prince Edward Island, to Newfoundland, to cottage country in Quebec. Quebecers who own a cottage can't go out to their own cottage. Ontarians who own a cottage in Quebec can't go there. And there are other movement restrictions. So there are restrictions on many, many different levels, and that concerns people. There's the fact, and you know, Donald Trump highlighted that this week, and more power to him. What about places of worship? Did the right to practice your religion, not to hold your religion, you know, I mean, you're free to believe, but for many religions, particularly Christianity in its several forms, many religions stress the importance of gathering together to worship, and that's elementary. The Christian terms, the people of God come together to worship God. That's elementary. Well, that went out the window very, very fast on the basis of gatherings. So, depending on what the jurisdiction is, gatherings of more than in Ontario, 5 people, in some places 10 people, in some places 20, are prohibited. and that slid by so quickly. Even those of us in the freedom movement, I wouldn't say we didn't notice it, but the full significance of it, I think, only began to be understood in the last couple of weeks, as creative pastors in several parts of Canada thought, well, okay, I'll have a drive-in service in a big parking lot. There's one every Sunday in Aylmer, Ontario. There's one in Nepal and Saskatchewan that got into a lot of trouble. And the pastor's idea was people stay in their car, and they're obviously spaced out, more than 6 feet apart. And the pastor would get up on a platform and would conduct the service and preach. And you would hear him via some sort of low frequency channel that you could pick up on your car radio. Sort of like a drive-in theater in the old days, only it's a drive-in church. Well, it wouldn't have quite the fellowship that you might have in church, but at least it would get the congregation together, and they could, have, distance fellowship, which is certainly better than nothing. Well, both of those have came under severe scrutiny. And the battle just to hold a church service has been carried on all across North America, in some cases very successfully, as in many places, some places in the United States, in other cases with some degree of persecution or threats. And this is where the civil authorities, and I would say in Canada, many of them contemptuously anti-Christian. Although they wouldn't say so, but that they have nothing but contempt for Christianity. And the problem with many Christians is, the reality is, we're peaceful, law-abiding people. So you tend to want to go along with the law, whether you agree with it or not. The law says this, okay, I'll obey it. That's just the mindset. So that's the battleground that's been there. And now, again, you have to acknowledge and thank President Donald Trump for his leadership on this. He said it was actually a genius construction. He said, churches are an essential service. Now, of course, the cultural Marxists just wince at that, would adopt a face that looks as though they'd swallowed a particularly vile dill pickle. But he makes a good point. Grocery stores are essential service and are open. Well, you know, obviously, I don't think we have to belabor the point. Drug stores for the same reason. Liquor stores. In Ontario, pot shops, termed a little bit more felicitously, something of you all did. Marijuana dispensaries, but there was apparently an essential service. You don't want the stoners getting too strung out and not being able to get stoned, do you? Well, our church is not an essential service. Now, this is where, you know, Donald Trump, whether or not he is a deep believer or not, has absolutely put his finger on something extremely important. You know, the Bible says man shall not live by bread alone. And that's not just a nice turn of phrase. Essential to your humanity is your religion or your faith. Well, is are places of worship and thus not an essential service? And I think they are. I was watching my daily dose of CNN for its concoction of nonstop anti-Trumpisms and lies, and it was going over the approaches to houses of worship in New York City. And it seems as though most of the major branches of the faith are on side. The base of that these houses will remain closed for a long time. I think they won't open until phase four of the reopening program of the state of New York. Some parts of New York are only in stage one. Some, like New York City, are not even there yet. But it's clear how far down religion is in the minds of the cultural Marxists who dominate so much of the establishment. And what Donald Trump said and emphasized is that it's an essential service. It is part of what makes us human. In fact, what we gain from our religion may help us deal with this pandemic. I mean, the pandemic raises questions that go to some pretty fundamental concerns of life, and that brings you into the moral, and that, of course, that's the purview of religion. So that was a concern of some of the people at the rally. That's a long way away from the rally, isn't it? And then, of course, a very big concern is vaccination or forced vaccination. We keep hearing a lot about that. But, you know, the big hope is a vaccine that will immunize people to the coronavirus. That's the big hope. And, you know, there's discussion as to whether will that occur within by the end of the year, as Donald Trump thinks it might, or will it be 18 months away, or whatever. But the big fear is that you might be forced to take that. You might be forced to be vaccinated in some scenarios I've seen to hold a job, to get on an airplane, to collect government benefits. Well, that offends me as a civil libertarian. I don't want some government official saying he's got the right to stick a needle in my arm or else. Would I take the virus, vaccine? I'm not sure. I'm not as hardcore on vaccines as some of the people I know who think they basically are injecting metals and poisons into your body, and that they have bad can have bad side effects. I don't doubt they have bad can have bad side effects. In my own view, it's a matter of playing the odds. If we're talking about myself, so I would want to have a rough idea. What's the chances of the bad side effects, and what are those side effects? And then I'd take my chances. You know, if we're talking about 1 in 10,000, if I'm convinced the benefits outweigh the risk, yeah, I'd do it. If it's 1 in 2, maybe not. some people are opposed to vaccination completely, and they were represented at the rally. And others are, like me, are opposed to compulsory vaccination. And we were represented. There are those who are concerned about 5G. There were those who were concerned about the ongoing pernicious role of Red China. Red China knew, first of all, that Red China was where the coronavirus originated, in Wuhan. So it's rightly called the Wuhan flu. The Chinese government learned about it, suppressed the information, persecuted doctors who tried to sound the alarm, lied about it once it became obvious there was a virus. It lied to the world, saying that it really wasn't transmissible from people to people. Now, you know, you might say, well, maybe they were wrong, maybe they made a mistake. No, they knew it. In fact, they were acting on that knowledge. When they shut the city of Wuhan, which is, I believe, about 18 million people, up tighter than a drum, locking people inside, ending transportation, ending the economy. Well, if it wasn't transmissible by humans, if it somehow just kind of floated in out of the air, well, maybe, which is possible. I mean, I'm not saying that the virus or the disease necessarily is transmissible by human beings, but initially, they said it was, and they knew better. So they have a lot to answer for. And there's more and more discussion, as I'll mention later on in the show, about that. And it's good. Canadians are finally focusing on the fact that China is not a roaring economic tiger, and we should be just standing there with our mouths agape, wondering how they do it and all that. The economic achievements of China are considerably overstated. But the sort of regime it is, controlled by power freaks, liars, tyrants, people who trample human rights and spy diligently on their citizens. And they are not good partners internationally. They've spied on Canada repeatedly and other countries. They have tried to intimidate dissidents right here in Canada with no respect for our borders. So there's a growing recognition of that. One of the things that really impressed me at the rally yesterday is the number of people who are now using terms like it's communism. What we are being debased into accepting, you know, long lineups to do almost anything, or to go into stores. Well, I don't do lineups well. I know from time to time you may have to line up, but we have tried to organize the society up until recently where lineups were, as much as possible, avoided for convenience. Besides, you know, time is money. Standing there in a line, I'm losing time. I'm largely wasting time. I know you could be on your phone, but that's just not right. But for completely arbitrary reasons in many places, we are made to line up. Line up to get into a drugstore that is, you know, may have five people allowed in at a time. It's a huge, huge place. You know, the stated reason is, well, we have to make sure people socially distance. You know, they keep the the 6 feet foot distance. But my counter to that, of course, is, you think I'm a moron? I'm an adult. I can guesstimate 6 feet. And yes, if I get to go in shopping, I'm going to try not to huddle up to the man or woman ahead of me. I'll give them a 6 foot berth if I'm shopping. The system will be perfect, of course, but we should be trusted to be able to muddle through, but we're not. Some businesses this past week were allowed to reopen retail. And it'll be interesting to see what the results are. In many cases, people were very much restricted from going into the stores, you know, only a couple at a time. Now, you know, depending on what sort of retail it is, that may be okay. But in other cases where, you know, maybe a fair number of people want to get into that store to look around and shop, it won't be okay because they'll be forced to stand out on the street in a lineup until such time as a couple of people leave and then a couple more people can go in. And if it's what's generally called discretionary shopping, many people may be unwilling to do that. I'm not going to go spend 20 minutes to get into a store that I'm not even really sure. I just like to look around. Maybe I want to buy, maybe I don't. And then go walk a block or two, and there's another store. Well, kind of interesting. I might, there's a lineup. And many people will just walk away, which will cut into these stores further. I don't think this system, as they love to say in the jargon of the day, I don't think it's sustainable. Anyway, the protest was great, a great spirit. I met a lot of new people, a lot of people with varying points of view. It's amazing how this has become a magnet. And it was decided that we would march or parade, walk. I guess it would be about 7 blocks west along College Street to Spadina. And we took up almost the entire length of those 7 blocks. It was a big parade, and not everybody who was at Queen's Park joined. So it's a little over half an hour to walk down to Spadina, walk back. And I must say, there was a good sized Metropolitan Toronto police presence. Everything was peaceful, which is, and we didn't expect anything other than that. The Antifa may have been in our midst spying and taking pictures. I think there were people, but they did not seek a confrontation. My reading of the Antifa is that they are now super super establishment. Yeah, they've slurped the Kool-Aid, and they're greatly afraid for their own soy boy hides, and they're diligently hiding out in their wherever they live, mocking us as supporters of the virus. Well, none of us supports the virus. It's not a matter of, are you pro-coronavirus or not? Well, no, I'm not pro-coronavirus, but I'm also kind of not prepared to give up all my freedoms in a badly planned battle against it. You know, I'm not unreasonable. I'm sympathetic. Our politicians, and perhaps even our epidemiologists and other medical people, did not know in advance about the coronavirus. We are learning. They are learning. So I don't fault people for making the odd mistake. I do fault, though, fault the Canadian government for, and many of the provincial governments for having drawn erroneous conclusions from bullshit. And, you know, there's no nice way to put it. People like Neil Fraser of the Imperial Hospital in London managed to convince the British leaders, many in America, particularly Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Theresa Tam, who's our Chief Medical Officer of Health in Canada, and of course our Prime Minister, and many provincial premiers, convinced them of absolute nightmare out of some science fiction novel scenario of absolute devastation. America was predicted to lose 2 million people. In Ontario alone, we were told if they didn't do anything, this, the premier passing on this information in late March said, if we didn't do anything, we between 100,000 and 200,000 Ontarians and our province of 14 million people would be dead by the end of May. He also said if we took really strict measures, if we adopted really strict measures, the death toll could be between 3,500 and 13,000 by the end of April. Well, we're nearly at the end of May and it's 2,000. He was sold a bill of goods. President Trump has been sold a bill of goods, which I don't think he totally believes, to his credit. The British Prime Minister was sold the bill of goods. Our own Prime Minister and the Chief Medical Officer of Health was sold a bill of goods. Okay. You believe what you're told? Fair enough. And you act upon it, that may make some sense. But then when you find out it's false, and you continue to act in the same way, now then that is stupid, or worse. If all your life you've been told, if you drink water, you will get sick, and you religiously stayed away from water, you drank fruit juice, wine, beer, anything but didn't drink water. And then you found out that as long as the water's clean, it's a wonderful thing for you. It's vital to life. Well, I think you would be resentful of what you've been told, and you would presumably change your habits to be able to take to benefit from this water that you long denied yourself. Well, our leaders were basically terrified into essentially shutting down the economy or crippling it. It turns out much of what they were told was a wild exaggeration by a man who may not have even believed it himself. We know that because Professor Neil Ferguson was caught twice, maybe more often, but twice, having his married girlfriend, who's a radical leftist, over to his place for an afternoon delight in March. He in Britain was Dr. Lockdown. Dr. Stay at Home. That's what, and Britons were locked up a lot tighter than Canadians or Americans. Well, he didn't practice it himself. So what does that mean? Is it the typical elitist, well, these are the rules for the common people, but we who are on the top we're immune. We can do what we want. Or did he, for reasons I cannot quite imagine, know this was a lot of nonsense? And you know, because it's nonsense, he shouldn't have to follow. Now I would agree. You know, if you think that this is all a lie or largely a lie, well, you know, why restrict your life? Anyway, about China. This is from an article by Terry Glavin of the National Post. It makes a lot of sense. it's all about some of the concerns about Red China. and Canadians' reaction. The National Research Council, Canada, he says, was badly hacked back in 2014, or in the federal bureaucracy's lexicon, was made a victim of Chinese computer network exploitation activities. In everyday English, hacked. Okay. And that vandalism ended up costing taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars to repair. And yet, our government, under the trust fund kid, it's riddled. The senior echelons of the Liberal Party is absolutely riddled with pro-red Chinese people for a variety of reasons. Some imagine great financial benefits. One of the major shadowy backers of the Liberal Party, especially in the province of Quebec, is the Demeray family, who run Power Corporation, a big corporation. And they've been big on the China front for years, but presumably because they can have, or they think they can, make a lot of money. But there are other important people in the Liberal Party that are big China fans. Former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien frequently goes over to China as on business, whatever that might be. Paul Martin, a former Prime Minister. John McCallum, who's a very senior Liberal. He was Justin Trudeau's first Minister of Immigration, then made him the ambassador to Peking. He's married to a China woman, and he's a big China fan. And there are others. Anyway, you would think, though, that this outright espionage, this hacking, is obviously a highly hostile act, might smarten some of these people up. And they say, well, look, this is costing hundreds of millions of dollars to repair. Well, maybe we better cool relations with Red China. No? No. Anyway, Terry Glavin goes on to say, an Angus Reid poll released this week demonstrates once again that Canada is unique in the G7, perhaps even in the G20, in the breadth and depth of the yawning chasm that separates public opinion in the country on one side and on the other the slavishness that passes for government foreign policy posture in respect of the pampered and corpulent ruling class in Red China. Canadians are pretty solidly critical of Red China. Much of our federal government is sycophantic. Only 14% of Canadians have a favorable view of China. Only 12% of us want closer trade with China. Only 14% of us think it would be a good idea to allow Peking's national champion telecom giant Huawei to get in on Canada's 5G wireless network. And that's a big push. It's a decision that the trust fund kid has continued to kick down the road. But our intelligence establishment opposes it. Our military establishment opposes it. The United States, of course, opposes it. And some of our partners in the Five Eyes, this is the Electronic Alliance of Australia, New Zealand, Britain, Canada, and the United States to monitor the communications and to protect our security. Well, our partners in that, certainly in the United States, New Zealand, and Australia are opposed. We've not made a decision yet. And that is worrisome. That decision should have been made several years ago and made resoundingly in the negative. 3 out of 4 Canadians polled say human rights and the rule of law and not trade and investment and that sort of thing should be most important elements in our dealings with Red China. As for the coronavirus catastrophe, 84% of the Angus Reid poll respondents say Peking has been neither transparent nor honest about the COVID-19 situation in China, a situation that was allowed to inflict itself on more than 4 million people around the world, killing at least, by now it's about 300,000 of them, including over 6,000 Canadians. This wasn't just a matter of a relatively harmless series of big fibs or lies or obfuscations to save face. These lies and delays and dishonesty had let that virus burst out into the rest of the world, and so it's already killed over 300,000 people, including over 6,000 Canadians. As and today, they're very close to 100,000 Americans. The horrible behavior of the Red Chinese has had consequences, lethal consequences. And we should not forget that, and we should not forgive that. In fact, there is a movement, including the Premier of the province of Alberta, Jason Kenney, to ask for some form of compensation. That there's got to be a reckoning. They did this. This wasn't accidental, like things happen. This was a problem made many, many times worse by policy and by their lies. Terry Glavin says, but Ottawa hasn't yet found the courage to say no to Huawei or to join the United States, the European Union, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom in the audacious notion that, maybe there should be an independent inquiry about how the hell this meant the pandemic happened. I mean, that's not a particularly hardcore position, that maybe there should be an inquiry to see how we got to this state. Why? Well, because China's offended by it and opposes it. The World Health Organization, its credibility already shot as a virtual agent for Red China, is against it as well. So Trudeau is keeping quiet. Trudeau has also declined to address the horrifying results of an in-depth investigation by Amnesty International carried out in collaboration with the Canadian Coalition on Human Rights in China that details the bullying, bigoted campaigns waged by Peking's proxies in Canada. This is on Canadian soil. The investigation's report lays out a reign of fear and that employs direct threats of violence, including sexual violence and even death, targeting mostly Chinese living in Canada involved in the pro-democracy movement. titled Harassment and Intimidation of Individuals in Canada Working on China-Related Human Rights Concerns. That was a pretty long title. The report sets out in meticulous detail dozens of instances in which Hong Kong democracy protesters, Tibetans, Uyghur Muslims, and Falun Gong, that's a kind of a self-help may sound a little too trite, but personal development and philosophy came out of China. The Red Chinese government just hates these people. How the practitioners are of these, or believers of these causes, are subjected to surveillance, monitoring, phone hacking, computer hacking, website hacking, and violence on campus at rallies and at cultural events. In Canada. That this in itself is a scandal. Quote, individuals responsible for the threats often remain anonymous or invisible, said Amnesty International's Alex Neve, but make it clear that they are strong backers of the Red Chinese government, often leaving no doubt that they are directed, supported, or encouraged by the Red Chinese government. And this is all on Canadian soil. Any nationalistic government would be absolutely up in arms. They would call in the Red Chinese ambassador and kick out a half dozen diplomats, just as a show of protest. And then, of course, there's the ongoing case of Meng Wanzhou. She is the chief financial officer of Huawei, and she's the daughter of a founder. She is in a she's in Canada, awaiting extradition to the United States. Now, there's an ongoing legal challenge to that. Meanwhile, unlike most people awaiting extradition, she's not in jail, but is in a in her own princely manner. And Glavin says, Meng is one of those tens of thousands of jet setters from the Chinese Communist Party's princelings class who have been allowed to make Canada a sort of robber's nest and real estate bolt hole for their billions of shady dollars. Meng is currently enjoying life in one of her family's two mansions in Vancouver's fancy Shaughnessy neighborhood. One of the reasons that real estate is so horrifically costly in Vancouver is that we have allowed large numbers of very rich and very often shady Chinese millionaires to take up residence here. Wrong, wrong, and all wrong. Well, I'm going to play some tunes by a man who in some ways has had a bit of a troubled life. He had quite a drinking problem. But he also is a very religious man and has a great voice. This is Randy Travis. I'm going to play a few tunes by him. This is my musical break. This, of course, is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on AltRightTV.com. Randy Travis.
Darling, I'm gonna love you forever. Highly sensitive to four things: aluminum, please connect me with 1982. I need to make apologies for what I didn't do. I sure do need to tell her that I thought the whole thing through, and now it's clear that she is what I should have held on to. They say hindsight's 20/20, but I'm nearly going blind from staring at her photograph and wishing she was mine. It's that same old lost love story. It's sad, but it's true. There was a time when she was mine.
Graceful that.
Suppose I called you up tonight and told you that I love you, and suppose I said I want to come back home, and suppose I cried and said I think I finally learned my lesson, and I'm tired of spending all my time alone. If I told you that I realize you're all I ever wanted, and it's killing me to be so far away, would you tell me that you love me too? And would we cry together? Or would you simply laugh at me and say, I told you so? Someday you come crawling back and asking me to take you in. I told you so, but you had to go. Now I found somebody new, and you will never break my heart in two again. Got down on my knees and told you I was yours forever, would you get down on yours too and take my hand? Would we get that old time feeling? Would we laugh and talk for hours the way we did when our love first began? Would you tell me that you've missed me too and that you've been so lonely?
You waited for the day that I returned.
Oh, this is Randy Travis, this is Paul Prom, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Prom.
In days of yore from Britain's shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave